Sophia's Pizzeria, the official pizza of New England Soccer Weekly, the New England Revolution Post-Match Report, and 1510 WUFC. Buy two large cheese pizzas for just $13.95 today. For more specials, visit Sophia's Pizzeria online at sophiaspizzahouse.com or give them a call at 617-471-0004. And be sure to check out New England Soccer Weekly and the New England Revolution Post-Match Report, all on 1510 WUFC, where liberty has a voice.
Want something different for dinner tonight? Then check out Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. With four locations across the metro Boston area, Papagayo's is the perfect restaurant for a party of two or 20. So come and have a burrito or a signature taco, and don't miss the New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WUFC. View the menu now at papagayoboston.com. That's P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O Boston.com.
It's the Pitch Invaders podcast, and now your hosts, Brian Speaks and Tom Quinlan.
Nice intervention there by Garrett Steele for Davies Weed. Yeah! He keeps on keeping on. Columbus wanted the goal to close the gap. Instead, it's extended. And it's the straw that stirs the Revolution drink. Lee win, 1-0.
Max Bratos giving his best Paul Bearer impression on Lee Wynn's opening goal the other night for the Revolution when they took down the Columbus Crew and advance on to the Eastern Conference Finals.
No, I do it pretty good. I do it pretty good under Paul Bearer impersonation.
Yeah?
Oh, Undertaker! Oh, Undertaker!
That's pretty good.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go. Well done. Throwback Tuesday to the 90s. Rest in peace, Paul Bearer. What a finish, though, to the Eastern Conference semifinals. Let's just get set up the scene first for everybody at home that's listening, that's been living under a rock, and does not know what's going on. So in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference semifinals in Columbus, Ohio, the New England Revolution took down the Crew by a final count of 4-2. Now, they left that game where you're thinking to yourself, okay, can Columbus come back here and do it? Can Columbus make the impossible the possible? Yeah, no, that wasn't the case. Revolution beat the Crew back here at Gillette by a final tick, a 3-1 the other night. 7-3 is how it finishes up on aggregate. As I said before, Lee Wynn has a pair of goals in the series. He's in camp right now with the U.S. men's national team, and a shout out to him. Congratulations for making it.
Much deserved call up.
Also, before we go any further on this show, it's Veterans Day. So you see somebody or know somebody that served in this country, you thank them because they protect our freedom. And, I mean, you got to respect your heroes. So we here at the Pitch Invaders podcast would like to recognize our fallen heroes today and our veterans and our servicemen and women that are protecting our country.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, and then to the other side, New York and D.C., that was the other Eastern Conference semifinal game. New York, kid, it's going to be the Red Bulls in the Revolution. And had the Red Bulls do it. Well, they went and opened up their series after playing three games in 8 days. The third game in 8 days for New York. Host D.C. and Harrison beat them in New Jersey. Dos a cero. And then pretty much the same situation that D.C. is in as Columbus. But D.C. made it a little bit interesting when they went back to RFK Stadium. They put at least one on the board. Get the first goal of the match. But New York's able to take it home as they finish off DC United.
Yeah, it was a pretty good overall. I mean, I don't think anyone really thought that last game was going to be as good as it was. But
right, no, DC, that was crazy. I thought DC could have definitely shocked New York.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, the away goal definitely kind of factored in for New York scoring.
So the away goals did matter, Brian.
They also mattered last night, did they?
They did not. They did matter last night. Thank you for alluding to it. Seattle and LA will meet in the Western Conference Finals. It's exactly what MLS wanted in terms of bringing a national attention to the sports scene. Seattle advances on aggregate, finishing 1-1, but had that all-important away goal. And Brian guaranteed me on this show last Thursday that the away goal would affect somebody, and it did.
It did. Shocker how, you know, having a clear-cut advantage would factor into at least one game.
I tell you what, though, that game last night, first off, it was stupid as all hell that they put it at 10:30 on NBC Sports Network. And obviously, the other Western Conference semifinal matchup was LA and Real Salt Lake, and it finished nil-nil after the first match, and then LA came back and absolutely slapped around Real Salt Lake 5-0. So we don't have much to get into that one. But
other than Landon Donovan is so good still. Like, so very good. 3 goals, 1 assist.
Okay. I mean, it was very impressive performance, and you have to... Hey, listen, give credit where credit is due, because they opened that game absolutely on the front foot. What do you got right there?
That didn't really work.
No, that didn't really work at all. Well, you were trying to, like, throw something in my face?
Yeah, yeah. I have a soundboard open. I thought it was going to work. It's not. I'm technologically...
Here's the thing. The away goals did end up playing a big factor into the Seattle-Dallas thing, but I still think it's an overall overrated factor. I mean, now you have 4 teams that presumably you would think are going to score enough that it doesn't matter about away goals. It just matters about getting that win. So, I mean, your impressions on what is going to be a very high intensity conference finals in both the Eastern and Western side of things. All 4 teams are going to beat the hell out of each other in a week here.
Yeah, and I think you have 4 of the best teams in the league,
right,
which is a plus. I mean, it's, you know, kind of a nod that the playoff situation sometimes can work. I don't think it's always the case. I mean, you know, you look at other major sports in the U.S. and you don't always have the best 2 teams playing in a championship,
right,
because the playoff situation doesn't really pan out.
This you get time, the underdog sometimes, yeah. you get the story, you get those dark horses, or you get those mid teams, yeah, that, you know, pounce on the number one seed. So sure, you, like you said, perfectly put,
yeah,
you have the 4 best teams playing in the MLS conference finals right now.
4 of the best. Four of the best.
Okay.
You know, I think that it's going to be, you know, I think both games are going to be, well, both series are going to be really interesting. I think that there's a rivalry between both teams,
yeah,
or both series, you know, and I think that that's going to really be exciting to watch. I look forward to, you know, L.A., Seattle just as much as I do Red Bull New England. I think they're both going to – all both series are going to be really good to watch.
I mean, you remember to your L.A.-Seattle point, and before we even move into that, Will's not here today. We were supposed to have our friend Wilson Gibbons come on, but – Will's not here, so it's just me and Brian, so, yeah. But going back to the LA-Seattle point, you left the season, the regular season, 2014, saying, gosh, how good would it be to see another 180 minutes of that after just watching 180 minutes of a home-and-home series to close out the 2014 MLS regular season. You get that again here, and to be honest, Dallas pushed Seattle to the limit. So I'm only wondering, what is Bruce Arena going to bring to Ziggy Schmidt's Seattle Sounders? Because Oscar Pereja probably could have won that game last night, especially if they called that penalty against Seattle when Castillo went down. Chad Marshall pushed the hell out of him.
Both teams had a perfect situation where there should have been a foul called.
Fair.
So, I mean, yeah, you know, Zach Scott absolutely fouled
Castillo?
Castillo.
Yeah, I said Chad Marshall, yeah, was up.
That was an absolute penalty. Like, there's no denying it. He bullied him off the ball. He, yeah, kicked out his leg. He tackled. He, like, everything was wrong about that. It did piss me off that they didn't call that, because I don't think this isn't the time to do that. This is the playoffs. If it's a foul in Dallas, it's gotta be, you gotta call it in Seattle. I mean, yeah, I know you have, you know, 40,000 people barking at you if you're the referee, but that's what you're there for. And Toledo is awful and is always awful. I hope he doesn't ref another playoff game, and especially not a playoff game that my team is directly affected by. Yeah. He's awful. He always does this. He puts the game into his own hands. Like, he wants to be a part of it, it seems, at this point. Like, he's just doing it so consistently.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that as much as Dallas should have got a penalty, there was another situation. I forget exactly what it was. I don't have my notes in front of me, but... You know, Seattle has every...
Seattle had one, too, right
just
in there.
A legitimate claim. Yeah. Just as legitimate as
Only
Dallas
like
does.
6 minutes earlier, too, before the Castillo no-call.
Let me try to find it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to comment on the referee as much because I don't have a deep enough understanding to really go after the head man for last night. But I will say this, that to Brian's point, if you're not capable of making those calls in a big-time situation like that, then don't make the calls. Like, I'm listening to Kyle Martino, who a lot of people like to grieve to, and I can understand why. Kyle Martino says some pretty egregious stuff sometimes. But, I mean, I thought he was on point last night when you're going through the slow motion replay of Castillo going down in the box. And, I mean, it's a penalty. By the law, it's a penalty. And the referee's right there. And, you know, I was talking to people last night that I was watching the game with, and they just said, you know, the referee is giving a makeup call right there. And I don't think that's right, if that's the case. I mean, and I know that's a pretty hard judgment and allegation to make against somebody, but I don't think if you're incapable of making those big-time calls, then you shouldn't be in... I mean, it goes back to when Vancouver got screwed against Dallas. You know? You got to know when to make the call and when not to make the call. I know Mark Geiger... That was a situation where Mark Geiger made the call. That wasn't a favorable call. But he made it. I mean, you're not supposed to give that hand. You shouldn't have to give that handball right there and screw over Vancouver. But by the letter of the law, he made the right call. And that's why Geiger's a World Cup referee.
Yeah, just real quick. It was Clint Dempsey was taken down like in the middle of the second half. I forgot who took him down. But it was people were calling for a penalty there, too. So
a couple of times then. So three times in
even
the game.
Evened out.
Evens out, but at the end of the day, Seattle, LA is what you want if you're an average sports fan. Because, well, first off, if you paid attention, because average sports fans still watch MLS. If you've paid attention, you saw, as I said, two teams that closed out the regular season previewing what was going to come in the conference finals. And now you got it. So, is Seattle ready for this challenge? Because right now I'm looking at an LA team that doesn't look like it can be stopped. And since its loss on the final day of the season to Seattle, I think, you know, that home game showed me that everything has changed. Because that LA team at home is so dangerous. And then them opening that first game back in LA... I don't think it's a good thing for Seattle because, I mean, they might be behind the ball, eight ball early there, and if they don't come away with any goals in L.A., it's going to be very hard to do anything at home, even in a 40,000-plus stadium like that.
Well, I look at it in a different sense. I mean, while Seattle wasn't impressive last night, what they did do that impressed me was they shut down Dallas. And yes, Dallas doesn't have the finishers that LA does. They don't have Donovan. They don't have Keane. They don't have the new look Gyasi Zardes, who is 100 times better than he was last year. But what Seattle was able to do, they were able to shut down speed. We all know that outside of Yedlin, Seattle probably has the slowest back line left in the playoffs. But with the help of Chad Marshall, who had a phenomenal game, he was able to shut down the speed of Dallas, and LA can't match that speed. Dallas was by far the quickest team out of all the remaining playoff teams. I mean, they have nothing but youth, nothing but untapped potential. I mean, Tesho Akindele, Mauro Dares, even Blas Perez, as much as he's an oaf, he's got some quicks. So,
I ask a question about Tesho Akindele?
Yep.
What does it take for this kid to make the first team in Jurgen's camp?
More time. I mean, That's my thing. More time.
Do you think? Would you have to, looking at the way Teshuwak Ndele has evolved this year into a professional footballer? Would you take him within the next 2 or 3 U.S. men's national team camps?
Probably.
Why not? Why not get the look? You know what I mean? I mean, if you're going to take Lee Wynn, who's already playing in a playoff battle right now, and he's only going to play against Colombia. He's coming back after Colombia. So for you Revs fans out there that are worried that he's going to be with this U.S. team the entire time, him and Jones are coming back after Friday from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's at least Jones has gone on record and said that. I haven't heard anything that Lee said it. I'm looking right here at Teshuwak Ndele. The main reason I might take him is he's eligible for Canada. So maybe that's why I take him more than anything, just to rip him away from Canada.
He's height, though, too. He's a body. He is...
I mean, he's 22. I mean, why isn't this guy getting any looks at the lower level? I mean, that would be my first question.
Why
isn't Tab Ramos picking him up and, you know, he playing in the under-23 World Cup or the under-23 squad?
Playing on the same...
looking right here, the only national experience he's ever had was in 2009 where he was called up for the Canadian U-17.
So maybe he has more experience playing with Canada. Maybe he's got more of an in with the Canadian Football Association right now. Is that what you're thinking, maybe?
No, I think it's odd that... You know, he hasn't gotten any touch. I mean, you look at players that
untapped potential
that just get minutes with the U-16s and the U-20s and, you know, whatever younger developmental crew that is. And this guy's not getting any. So, I mean, that's interesting to me.
That is interesting because I would have imagined that a kid that's going to get Rookie of the Year accolades probably when it's all said and done after the playoffs is over, to not get a look like that from Jurgen.
Actually, real quick, right here on the ever-reliable Wikipedia.
Yeah.
On November 5th, 2014, it was reported that Akindele had turned down a call-up from Canada with a view to represent the United States instead.
So Teshuwak Ndele wants to play for Jurgen from the all-reliable Wikipedia. Can we get a source on that?
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
Wikipedia is the source. Hold on. The source is...
I would like to see Akindele in red, white, and blue. I mean, you got so many good pieces that you're going to put around him. And I want to talk about what Lee Wynn's going to get to play with, too. Who do you got on that source, though?
The actual source is from Stars and Stripes FC.
The Stars and Stripes FC, and they're very good over there. They're very good over there. Follow Stars and Stripes FC if you're not already.
And written by the great Ryan Rosenblatt. So this is basically gospel at this point.
Right.
Teshuwak Ndele doesn't like Canada.
Someone would say he doesn't like Canada. He wants to play for the U.S.
He's pulled the full Sidney Leroux and said, F Canada.
Not bowl a Sidney Leroux. Even though Sidney Leroux will be representing our U.S. women's national team coming up this summer, and I can't wait to start talking more U.S. women's national team. That's what we have to start looking forward to, Brian. Talking about Abby Wambach, Hope Solo, Sidney Leroux. I want Sidney Leroux on this show at one point.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I think it's going to happen. She's played in Boston before. She has a great relationship, clearly, with the people in Boston. That's why she left.
Abruptly.
Oh, wait, no, we got Heather O'Reilly in that deal.
No, Heather O'Reilly was already on the team. We got Christine Mewis.
Heather O'Reilly was already on the team. You're right. Excuse me. I don't know my breakers.
And we actually just got rid of Heather O'Reilly for two players that name escape me. So,
well, there you go. But, and moving on now, so recap. We were talking LA and Seattle. We got into talking about Dallas a little bit and the U.S. men's national team. So, I mean, the Western Conference Finals should be a great one. We still have a week to go. You got to remember that there's this international break in between the MLS playoffs, which is absolutely ridiculous, and it needs to go away quickly because how can you disrupt the playoffs like this, of this magnitude, with these teams who are playing so well with an international break? Fix it, MLS. Because, I mean, you really, I mean, either don't have the U.S. playing these games or fix the schedule so that the championship and the playoffs. I mean, listen, the only reason why I don't think MLS is going to adjust its schedule right now, especially its playoff schedule, is because of baseball. That's the only, let's just get it out there. The MLB is the reason why MLS will not change its playoff schedule to ignore, to not get disrupted by the international break. You don't want to fall in during the Fall Classic, if you're MLS right now, because the draw and the ratings would be significantly less, and I think that's why you don't see the playoffs start in mid to late October.
But meanwhile, the MLS just went up against Monday Night Football.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
But they did it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's stupid. There's no reason that that game had to happen last night. There's no reason that game couldn't have happened on Saturday.
No reason.
Not a single reason in the world.
And you know what? It probably would have looked better in the stadium, too. Because how much tarp did you see on the top level last night in Seattle? A place where I don't expect to see tarp. I don't want to see tarp there. Eh, some tarp in the upper sections last night. Now, granted, they got a great atmosphere. They got a great crowd. And, I mean,
it also holds 61,000.
It also holds 61,000 people. But, as you said, a Saturday night game, and that place is holding like 50,000 people right there, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with the fact that the game is on Monday. I thought that was stupid right from the start. I mean, it's dumb that you're putting that game at 10:30 at night on the East Coast. Yeah, I get it, you know, time zone. But you're going up against juggernauts. Like, Monday night football, there might as well be nothing else on TV. Like, you can just watch GBH. If you don't want to watch Monday Night Football, just watch some public broadcast.
Oh, come on. We got Blacklist on Monday nights.
Crap compared to it. Nothing.
Gotham? Blacklist?
Yeah, it's called the DVR. People watch football. That's what people are watching. People don't want to watch MLS soccer.
See, what would have been a great experiment last night is if... I would have loved to see an MLS do this. They should have put that Seattle game on national television. What would have been the hurt in putting that Seattle? I mean, it's a playoff game. We've had the Tigers and the A's put on national television in game one of the ALCS. What would it have been to NBC? How much would it have costed NBC to block out from 8 to 11?
What does NBC play on Monday?
Blacklist.
They wouldn't do that. It's like the only thing they have going for them.
So you bump it. You bump it back a week. You bump your programming back a week.
Not for soccer. Not right now. Not.
I think that's silly, and I think that's NBC not capitalizing on its opportunities because you could have had the chance to. And it's, listen, I understand three reasons why that game's not on national TV last night. It's a West Coast game. One, two, it's Seattle versus FC Dallas. And three, as Brian said, you're not going to move around programming for soccer yet. Simple as that. But I still would have loved to seen the game on NBC because we've had some of the worst national televised NBA, MLB, NHL, you name it, playoff games put on these networks. Do we forget? Lest we forget what happened in the Stanley Cup Finals a couple of years ago on NBC. So don't tell me that you can't find some time for some playoff action for MLS nationally yet. That's ridiculous. Pitch Invaders Podcast.
PIP.
PIP. Now let's move over to the Eastern Conference now. And before we start talking about New York and New England, let's talk about Lee Wynn. And we'll get into this Jermaine Jones camp. And, you know, first off, let's look at the roster that these guys will be playing with, because it's a fairly impressive roster. Somehow Bobby Wood made it back on. I think he just hopped in Jurgen's suitcase and said, I'm coming for the ride.
Apparently you neglect where he plays his club ball.
He also plays his club ball over in England.
Germany,
excuse me. He plays his club ball over in Germany and...
1860 Munich.
But it does it. But he didn't do anything when he in the last friendly. I mean, we're looking at guys that we want to see. Like, you know, okay, Bobby Wood had his time to do something, and he did nothing.
Bobby Wood is...
So now I want to see Miguel Ibarra. You know what I mean?
Okay, but when you look at it, Miguel Ibarra was born in 1990. Bobby Wood was born in 1992. So, yeah, Bobby Wood wasn't impressive. He's also extremely young. I mean, that's...
He's not extremely young. There's a two-year difference.
That's what's exciting about this roster. I mean, you look at it, I mean...
Guzan, Hamid, the goalkeepers, Brad Guzan, Bill Hamid, Sean Johnson, Nick Raimondo. Interesting that he takes Raimondo there. And then the defenders, Beasley, Beasler, Brooks... Cameron, Brooks is back, which is nice. Timmy Chandler, Garza, Fabian Johnson, Jermaine Jones, DeAndre Yedlin. So Jones is going to be playing center back for the U.S. Nice. Okay. And then the midfield, Kyle Beckerman, Alejandro Bedoya, Mix Discaru, Julian Green, Morales, Lee Wynn, Josie, Miguel, Ibarra, Morris, whose first name escapes me.
Jordan.
Jordan Morris, thank you.
Stanford.
Rubio Rubin, Bobby Wood, Chris Wondolowski, which is a shocking name, and we'll talk about him in a couple of minutes. But I like that midfield that Lee's going to get a chance to experiment with. And the guys, the one name that sticks out to me that all I care about seeing Lee play with is Julian Green. Because Julian Green might be the key to Lee's lock to get him into Copa America 2016. Because imagine if you can get a midfield tandem with like Lee and Julian, or if you can get something that can counter up the field, that you have pace, speed, and good intelligence on the ball. Well, I look no further than Julian Green and Lee Wynn, a guy that has perfected his craft and one that's trying to learn his trade. And I think they work. I think that combination right there spells something for success for me. I don't know what it is, but I really just like the idea of Julian Green playing alongside Lee Wynn.
I'm less interested in that. I honestly think that while they have Julian Green listed as a midfielder, I think he's far more impactful on the wing. That's mostly where it gets utilized. I kind of find it odd they have him in midfield.
But when I say okay, but with that being said, like, Lee plays in a system that goes from having his outside midfielders push up as wings. So he's sort of used to playing with those guys. Like, for example, three names that Lee continuously plays with that play out on the wings that have gotten better along with Lee. Kellen Rowe, Teal Bunbury, Diego Fagundes. You know, all three of those guys have midfield attributes, but mainly are put in a, except with the exception for Kellen, really, are put in that attacking winger outside role.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
what interests you? What interests you about what Lee Wynn has in that midfield?
I like to see what Lee and Mix Discarude could do together. You know, him and Alejandro Bedoya, that could be interesting too, to see. You know, they're kind of similar players. You know. So that could be cool. I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I like this roster, you know, outside of Wondolowski and DeMarcus Beasley. I'm done with those two guys. You know, DeMarcus Beasley, you know, great World Cup. Thank you. Love you, mean it. Actually, I don't even. You know, I'm done with people that are older than I am at this point. I mean, with the exception of Jermaine Jones, if you're older than I am, I don't want to see you on this roster anymore. And that includes Kyle Beckerman.
Nah, I think Beckerman it's got some time left in him. Wondolowski, I can see why you'd rather get a new crop of midfielders in there, but you don't want to see experience mold the future of your midfield. Like I can understand not wanting I can understand not wanting Beckerman in 2018. I can understand not even wanting Clint Dempsey in your starting 18 or even in your 23 in 2018. But you don't want any of those guys molding you got for now?
I don't, because I think that there's enough younger talent that has enough experience. You know, take your Josie out the door.
Sure.
You know, let's see, who else? Mix Discarude at this point, you know, has enough experience. Jermaine Jones, you know, Fabian Johnson, Jeff Cameron, you know, Matt Beasler. I mean, I think part of the reason, more so than anything, you take Nick Raimondo is because he has that experience. I think that he's a glue to, you know, a Sean Johnson and a Bill Hamid to help them grow. I think that's why, I think that was Raimondo's biggest job in Brazil, too, was just to be a motivator, you know, to be a guy that's a team guy, a fun guy to be around. So stuff like that I'm fine with, but there's develop. I would not like just Marcus Beasley just did do nothing for me in this situation. I've seen what he can do, and you know what? He's not going to be able to do it 2 years from now.
So what does Jones do for you in this situation then, if you don't mind me asking?
Jones right now is playing better than he has in years. He has been completely revamped since this World Cup, so I'm going to ride that out for as long as he's continued to be hot. And I'm taking that on now the club level and what he was able to do in Brazil. Him in Brazil completely did a 180 for me. I was not a Jermaine Jones guy till I saw what he could do in Brazil. And he did it consistently throughout the entire World Cup and has been one of the best American players, form-wise, throughout.
You can't argue that. I mean, when Jurgen Klinsmann's out there saying, getting critical of MLS and American players, the name that doesn't get brought up is Jermaine Jones. Why? Well, you know, I've said in the past that it's because he has a European background playing style that when he came over here to MLS, it was easy to adjust, but I don't even think that's a factor anymore. I think the guy's just playing, just to play and to prove a point, and he's playing to show that you can still do it at his age as well. So, you know, if you're an American soccer player, if you're a kid coming up through the system right now, you watch Jermaine Jones and say, I want to play as long as that guy. I want to be as good as that guy. And, obviously, you don't want to see Jones on a 2018 U.S. World Cup roster. But in terms of development and growing your system, he's the perfect guy to parlay that into the next chapter.
And I think, too, what Jermaine Jones offers is he has that ability to be the defensive midfield bruiser or the attacking midfield sensation.
Yep.
So I think that's good for someone like, you know, Alfredo Morales. I think that's someone who can benefit from him, who, from what I know of Morales, I think he's more of a defensive midfielder. I'll be honest, I don't watch a lot of Division II German soccer.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure he's more of a defensive midfielder, you know, kind of like a, you know, Michael Bradley, Kyle Beckerman type.
Right.
So I think that's what he's there for. I think he also adds kind of that strength to that midfield where if you put him in, you know, no one's really going to mess with Jermaine Jones. He's got that.
No.
He's got that, you know.
Swagger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think John Anthony Brooks could be somebody that could eventually grow into that. Timmy Chandler. I mean, these are young kids that need a figure to mentor them to become better players. And not just become better technical players or better skill players, but become better minds of the game. Become better intimidating factors and know when to grill somebody and when to lay off. And I think Jermaine Jones has perfected that. You know, he's created a persona about himself that of how to be a good tough guy. As of recently, at least, how to be a good tough guy and still do it without getting so many yellow cards or being in the referee's book as much.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Speaking of an aggressive style of play, though, you better believe New York and New England's going to be a slugfest. Let's get over to the Eastern Conference Finals.
To the Eastern Conference Finals.
Dun, dun, dun!
If we had production value, we could have figured that out better.
Could have. But I will say that New York and New England are, again, I said it just now, they're going to beat the hell out of each other. And New England has a lot of work to do because the one thing that still remains that people aren't realizing is that Federico Higuain did not play the other night for the Columbus Crew. So Crew 96 did not have that same attacking prowess as they would have if they were, if they were with Higuain. You know, being without that guy who is technically quick. I mean, he is that team's offense, essentially.
Him and Finley.
So you were missing a big part of that the other night, but now you got to forget that and move on and realize you got three names. You got three names to worry about. And one of the people in there has three actual, you know, names to his name.
So does that mean there's six names?
That's essentially six names. You got to worry about Bradley Wright Phillips. You got to worry about Thierry Henry. You got to worry about Lloyd Sim. And you got to worry about Peggy Louie Ndua.
Outside of Louie Ndua, they all have first names that could, that last names that could be first names.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of names in that situation.
There are a lot of names in that situation. And those guys are very, I was talking to Frank DeLapa the other night at the Boston Globe. You know, Frank, that always is in there with Jay Heaps after the games, yucking it up. And he said to me that, I said, I asked him, I go, what's going to be the difference between going from Columbus to New York? He goes, you'd have more experienced wing players out there. And you're going to have better distributors that New England's going to have to deal with. And Thierry Henry is playing out of his mind this MLS playoffs, that you're going to have to be very aware of what he does up the field. Now, I did talk to Paul Mariner also before the game. I said, you know, do you think Henry is a real MLS playoff MVP candidate right now? He goes, no, absolutely not, because he can still contain his game. So if New England can find a way to slow down Thierry Henry, and then you're making, then you're obsoleting the two wing guys in Lee and Dula or Lloyd Sam or Eric Alexander. And then on top of that, too, Roy Miller is not playing in any of the games. So New York's back line is going to be struggling. I mean, Hamas and Olave will be the only guy back there that you can really trust. And Luis Robles, who'll be standing in net. And then essentially, if you're New York, you're relying on your attack to get you through this series. And if Andrew Farrell's healthy, I don't think that's happening. If you're not seeing Andrew Farrell, it's a different story, because Kevin Alston's going to have to do a hell of a lot more work. But I don't know how New York wins without having a solid back four.
I think they win with their front seven. I mean, there's a lot of X factors to this game. I'm not 100% comfortable, especially when it comes to going down to Red Bull. The Revs have not proven that they can win in New Jersey. Thankfully, what's going to help me sleep over the next six nights is that the Revs have not played in New Jersey
since the Jermaine Jones
with,
signing.
With Jermaine Jones. And Jermaine Jones has completely turned this team.
They haven't
team
played
around
New York at all since, yeah, Jermaine Jones.
This
signing
team was not a playoff team until Jermaine Jones stepped through that door. And they are, what, 10-1-1 now with him?
Something crazy like that.
Like, talk about absolute X factor. Like, completely changed the dynamics of this team. He made,
in what sense, though?
He made the good players better, and it just, in what, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, because they actually started winning right after they announced Jermaine Jones. Jermaine Jones wasn't even in the building yet, and they broke that 8-game losing streak.
Yeah, it was against Chivas, yeah, or Colorado. One of those two teams. It was actually Colorado. They went and lost to New York, and they came back, tied Portland, and then beat Chivas.
So since they got him back, or since they got him, rather, it's been a different team. And I think what it is, I think that it just kind of changed the mindset of the players of, right, holy crap, we have Jermaine Jones walking through that door. That guy who scored one of the best goals in modern U.S. men's national team history against Portugal. Like, if they had won that game, like, if the U.S. could have held on for 90 seconds longer, that goal would have been, like, the next tier down from Landon Donovan scoring in Algeria. Like, that's how important that Jermaine Jones goal would have been.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, history didn't like it that way, and, you know.
But fortunately for history, the Revs were able to get Jones in a blind draw.
Yep.
And probably the only blind draw.
Oh, no, there's one brewing. There's one brewing right down the road.
It's called the dispersal draft.
No, it's a blind draw is coming, I'm telling you. Eric Cubatores, if the U.S., if Major League Soccer buys him, you're going to be looking at another blind draw situation with, like, 20 teams involved.
Yep, everybody will be involved. But looking at Eastern Conference Finals, though, you switch and you look at New England now and you say, okay, how do you stay rested but stay fresh at the same time? Because Jay said the other night, we have to embrace who we are. And by that, he meant you can't change your style of play for one game. You have to continue to grow as a team. And I thought he did a very good job in managing his style of play without losing any control on the series. So if you're Jay Heaps and crew, How do you replicate this similar type of performance in a week and a half from now?
I think you just go out and play your game. At this point, the Revs have a style, and you don't stray away from that at all. I mean, I think that they can match Red Bull with physicality. I think they can match the only real clear-cut advantage that New York has over the Revolution is Bradley Wright Phillips. I think that the midfield stack up pretty evenly.
Yep, especially with Jones in there, that's a different story.
And especially with Lloyd Sam playing as bad as he has. He's had a bad, bad playoff. I mean, he was awful against DC United.
Yeah, Bill Hamid had some pretty saves on Lloyd Sam too that, you know, Hamid may look better on pretty bad misses by Sam.
But that second game back in DC, Lloyd Sam did not look Lloyd Samish. And if the Revs can do that, and I think they can, it's a different story. I mean, then you're only really worrying about Thierry Henry and Bradley Wright Phillips.
Only worrying about some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
No big deal. Thierry Henry, who's won a World Cup in 98 and rewrote the rules on how to score in the Barclays Premier League. So,
and also rewrote the rules on how to use a double handball.
Run and play on the turf. Oh, gosh. He's going to have to play on turf in Gillette. Can you believe that? Thierry Henry.
Didn't he miss the end of the season with two Achilles heel issues? I mean, that turf at New England's not... It's decent turf. But, I mean, he's played in Portland, I believe.
Yeah, but it's not... I mean, it's not New England. Let's be honest. This is a football surface that these guys are going to be playing on.
But it's the same exact surface, according to people in the know, that the Timbers use. It's no different.
Fair. But people look at the stadium, they look at the atmosphere and say, that's a football field. The way it gets ripped up. I'm not a turf expert. I don't, you know, sit there with a laser beam and try to cut down each little... shred of grass, but the point is the guy's gonna have to play on turf in New England somewhere where he's never played before. Same thing with Amos and Olave too, so that'll be very interesting. And I know it's more of a story for the media to play with, but like, you wonder, how is this guy gonna respond to a Foxborough atmosphere? And in change, is that gonna draw a sellout crowd too? Is that gonna draw 40,000? Because here's the thing. If we come back here, the second leg on the 29th, Saturday, and this thing is tied, or the Revs have a one-goal advantage, and Thierry Henry is forced to play, I think we got a sellout crowd here of like north of 30,000. I mean, it'd be amazing to not see that, because you had a record-breaking attendance number the other night. And I can't imagine them not breaking another attendance record. You know what I mean? Especially with Thierry Henry here?
Yeah, I mean, there's no real reason not to. I mean, if they were able to do it.
Well, we have a lot of power over here, Brian. Yeah. You don't know?
Apparently. I don't know. I don't think we do.
We got two TIFOs. We bitched and moaned for months here on this show about not getting TIFOs. What do we have the last two home games?
I have it on good authority that the TIFO was not done based on what we hear say at the Pitch Invaders podcast. I hate to burst your bubble.
No, we started the conversation months ago about having TIFOs.
But those same conversations have been happening for years. But whatever, I digress.
You digress, but yeah.
I mean,
we push the needle.
There's no reason.
Needle pushers.
Well, that would just sound like we're heroin junkies. There's no reason that, you know, the Revs can't have great numbers for this game. I mean, if people were able to come for an insignificant game against what turned out to be an insignificant team, Toronto, there's no reason that we can't get behinds in the seats for a playoff game against a rival. The rival. I mean...
New York! This is an area that's starving for a regional rivalry like this. Starving for it. You know what I mean? Like, you haven't had a real good New York-Boston rivalry in ages. Maybe the last good rivalry between any New York-Boston team was when the Knicks and the Celtics met in the Eastern Conference quarterfinals a couple years ago. That's the last time I remember New York and Boston having even anything close to anything that resembles a rivalry.
Yeah, I think it's important in all sports to have that
regional rivalry,
the built-in rivalry, the rival from, you know, down the street. You know, unfortunately, our closest rival in all sports is New York. You know, so all roads kind of go through them. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's lacking. I mean, I think it's there. I mean, it's there with the people who care. I mean, the MLS fans know, you know, New York or you know, the New Jersey Red Bulls. You know, we're Revs fans in New Jersey. We're not. We don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And
stop calling the New Jersey Red Bulls because Will's not here all of a sudden.
New Jersey. Well, now it's playoff time. Now it's like I have to hate them again. I haven't had to hate, like you said, the Revs haven't played Red Bulls since before Jermaine Jones came. I haven't had to hate them for a while.
No.
Now the passion's built up.
Should be good, though. We got a couple weeks to digress and talk about it.
And I don't know what Will have to do with anything. That dude's not even from New York. He's from Connecticut.
Yeah, he's from New Haven.
Yeah. Prissy prick. Didn't even show up today.
Nope.
That's what you get. I call you a prick when you don't show up.
And stood up your friends.
Yeah.
And then we're not just saying me and Brian. You stood up Wilson today, Will.
Yeah.
I'm pointing at you.
You stood up America on Veterans Day. You better have a damn good excuse.
Again, shout out to all our veterans who serve in this country. You can follow Will Blasini on Twitter at Willie Football. Don't do it, though. He's a New York Red Bulls fan, unless you're a Red Bulls fan.
No, don't even do it. He didn't show up.
Okay. Brian.
Follow me instead. I shut up.
At Brian _ speaks. It's been a good pod. We want to know what you guys have to think about this show. All right? So leave a comment, okay? On the Twitter page, just let us know, hey, I like it, I don't like it. If you don't like it, just say you don't like it and then move on and unfollow us.
And then say, it's because of Tom.
Yeah. Nine times out of ten, it's because of me anyways. So hit us up on Twitter, at Podcast Invaders, at Podcast Invaders. We can talk there more. We'll have some fun, all right? All right, that's another edition of the pod. We'll be back on Thursday. I'll have some more treats for you guys as well. Follow the Twitter page for more updates. It's the Pitch Invaders Podcast. Peace.
Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Podcast Invaders. And don't miss out on all the soccer action on 1510 WUFC. Till next time, this has been the Pitch Invaders Podcast.
So Will sucks, huh? Dude, Papa Bot Chipsy.
That way I don't have to wait for that long.
I know, right? I'm going to be sleeping now. Sleepless. Sleeping sleepless?
Don't sleep.